6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Yeah, good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes. Good morning, Democratic senators. Find your skewns, as my friend Mark Riley is wont to say. Find them. If you don't have skewns, find your ovaries. Do whatever you have to do. I had a vision, Mark Riley. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you, sir.
I had a vision last night that all the Democratic senators stood up for John Conyers and in one foul swoop just stood up and said, yes, we stand behind John Conyers' desire. We stand behind his support. We stand behind his want to get a fair election system in this country.
And did they all have afros and, like, wear hippie clothes? Because that's the last time anybody stood up like that. Oh, it was in the late 60s, man.
What do they got to lose, Riley?
They got nothing to lose, but they don't have the stones.
Oh.
They don't have it.
I don't understand what kind of stones would it take if they all stood up. That, you know, they're okay, granted, they're a little outnumbered. But, I mean, if they all stood up and they all sort of decided amongst themselves that they were going to take this symbolic act to sort of, you know, show at least those of us who still believe somewhat in the Democratic Party and the Democratic system in general as a symbolic act to at least have the conversation in the House about what could be done if the world was a right place to live as opposed to the government being a right place.
You know what? This is the difference. I hate to say this. This is the difference between Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah.
The Republicans, faced with a similar set of circumstances, would have stood up and maybe would have walked out of Congress en masse.
I just don't understand the amount of wussitude within the Democratic Party.
Wussicity is the problem.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Wussicity. I'm sorry. I forget sometimes. I don't always know my words right. But it seems to me to be the right thing to do. Now we're relying on a rumor that Barbara Boxer will be the only one to stand up, maybe somebody else. If you want to support Congressman John Conyers and the House Democrats' drive for fair elections, they need a single senator, as we're saying here.
Just one!
Support their effort in order to require Congress to discuss the issue. The word is out that, as I said, Barbara Boxer, California Senator Barbara Boxer, might be persuaded to support the measure. So you can email her at her website, boxer.senate.gov/contact. Also go to the links page on morningsedition.com to see how to contact your senator. We did this stuff yesterday. You know, I mean, this is the action that has been, there's been a lot of momentum. There's been a lot of movement. We've been moving towards this. Obviously, you know, we were not part of the speculative process of math equations and whatnot.
I'm startled. I'm speechless.
Yeah? Yeah? Why are you speechless?
Because it's possible that Harry Reid himself.
We talked about that.
The Senate
yesterday.
Minority Leader.
You know, it's just like now, like, you know, all the hard work that a lot of people have been doing, you know, out there in the world to keep this momentum about election fraud going in terms of, you know, how the specifically, you know, disenfranchised voters and, you know, polling places only, you know, being under-equipped and only having one machine in minority neighborhoods and strongly Democratic neighborhoods.
These are all facts, by the way. This is not speculation. This is not rumor. This is not something that's coming out of the ether. There were lines. The morning that we got up to come in here, the Wednesday, November 3rd.
Yes.
The morning after the election, there were still people, when I woke up, standing in line in Ohio.
There might be a couple still staying there now, but the thing is... is that this is the stuff, this is not, you know, trying to break down, you know, whether or not, you know, voting machines, you know, were working properly or not, or whether they were fixed, because that's a harder thing to prove, but it's very easy to prove that these people were manipulated, that these people were disenfranchised, that people were put, their obstacles were put in their path on their way to the voting booths, that the voting machines that were available, there weren't enough to accommodate largely Democratic neighborhoods. That's all stuff that is proven.
Absolutely.
And this is real deal stuff. So Conyers is basically saying, I need one senator to stand up with me so we can get this thing on the floor for debate for 2 hours.
Each House. 2 hours in the House, 2 hours in the Senate. Is that too much to ask?
What the hell does Ted Kennedy have to lose? What the hell does Robert Byrd have to lose? What the hell does, you know, all of them. Why not Pelosi? I don't understand why they all just wouldn't stand up and say, let's talk about this. Because if they all did it, what price are they really going to pay that's going to be any different than they're already paying anyways, given the way the thing is tilted right now?
Listen, I am a fan of Barack Obama. We talked to him on the network when we first started here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But I'm going say something that a lot of other people will not say. Barack Obama, regardless of whether or not he's new and it could hurt his career, and he's such a high-profile guy, and the spotlight is on him, and yeah, he's a black guy, and Conyers is a black guy, Barack Obama needs to stand the hell up on this.
Yeah, we know. We just got word, as you said, that Senator Harry Reid, the minority leader, will stand up with Conyers, and yeah, it may be,
maybe it's possible.
But the thing is that if he does, maybe it will happen. Maybe there will be a resonating sort of like momentum where if he goes and Boxer goes, you know, that maybe they'll just. I'm craving drama.
You know what part of this is, Mark? I'm going to tell you why these people are considering this.
Mm.
Because it never dawned on them that Michael Moore would put that disgraceful display from 2000 in his movie.
Okay.
Okay. Remember the part where all of these members of the Congressional Black Caucus were trying to get people from the, from a Senate, again, one senator to stand with them about the Florida recount.
That was horrendous.
It was horrendous, and a lot of people thought that that happened outside the public eye. Putting it in that movie and having all those millions of people see the movie, now it's stuck in people's heads a little bit.
Well, we got a call on the line. We've got the Reverend Jesse Jackson on the line to give us this tip, to give us a lead on this. Reverend Jackson, Is it true that Harry Reid might stand up?
Well, I met with him and Senator Durbin and Stephanoff of Michigan last night.
Mm-hmm.
He said he felt 90% sure that a member would contest the seating of the Ohio delegation today, and that others would then speak to it. What I'm amazed about is that no Democratic senator has gone to Columbus to check on what happened. They go to Ukraine, they go to Iraq, they take these holiday trips around the world, but they can't quite make it to Columbus. And the violations in Ohio were worse than the violations in Florida.
Mm-hmm. Reverend, let me ask you a question, because, you know, Mark Maron was just talking about the idea that all of the Democrats in the Senate would stand with Congressman Conyers. Obviously, this is a dream he has, but what would they have to lose as a group if everybody stood up?
Well, they would have nothing to lose and everything to gain, because unless they stop their high-tech stealing of elections, then they'll be targeted and they'll very well be next, just as Dasher was targeted. You have this start here where the Diebold and Triad machines privately own, for the results are in their proprietorship, who made commitments to fold their election start and who they were voting for. That's an awful lot to trust to one who's a sworn political adversary. You had the issue of a woman, Ellen Connolly, who ran for Supreme Court Justice from Cleveland, but hardly a budget in Cleveland, in Cuyahoga County, where she is best known. Kerry got 120,000 more votes than she got. But in Butler, in Claremont, and Warren County, where she's hardly known, she got more votes than Kerry. It sounds like machine calibration and tabulation. Mm-hmm. You got the case of blacks in Columbus, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Akron, Youngstown, and Lyons, 4 to 6 hours to vote in the rain. It's really determined when there were dry machines, you know, inside the warehouse. So you have these, at some point, anomalies become a pattern. Exit polling was accepted as excellent in 47 states, but not in Florida, Ohio, and Pennsylvania.
So, Reverend Jackson.
What would not make a senator want to find out what happened?
Yeah, Reverend Jackson, we stay on the line. We got a couple more questions for you. Can you hang on over the break?
Indeed.
Okay,
thank you.
15 past the hour, we're talking to the Reverend Jesse Jackson. We'll be back on Air America.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley. Morning Sedition.
That's the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. On the phone with us is our regular guest here at the show, Reverend Jesse Jackson, talking about who and might stand up with John Conyers today, which senators. Now, you had a meeting with which senators, and who exactly do you think is going to stand up again, Reverend Jackson?
I met with Senator Reid, who is the Democratic Senate leader now, and Senator Stephanoff from Michigan, and Senator Dick Durbin,
Mm-hmm.
Also, might add, met with Senator Jeffers from Vermont as well on yesterday afternoon. So to read in the case that he feels reason to assure that a senator, whose name I shall not disclose now for his or her own purposes, will stand up today. What I'm amazed at is how we have dumbed down expectations. People in New York today should be calling Senator Clinton and Senator Schumer. Should be calling the senator over in New Jersey.
Corzine and Lautenberg.
Corzine and Lautenberg. I mean, 44 senators demanding a thorough investigation and seating the Ohio delegation provisionally based upon their outcome will make a huge statement to the world. Bush right now, without the challenge, has a kind of moral mandate based upon the numbers. The numbers will not stand up on the scrutiny. And that's the reason. The numbers will not stand up on the scrutiny. 40 years ago, this year, we got the right to vote. I didn't think that 40 years later, we'd be fighting as we are today to protect the integrity of our vote.
Senator, Reverend Jackson, the senator that you didn't want to mention, could that have been Barbara Boxer?
Well, her name is being tied around. I hope that she will stand up.
But did Senator Reid say somebody other than Senator Boxer to you?
Well, I see you're trying to put me in the jam in the morning, man. the word is simple.
Me and you go way back to Reverend. You know how it is.
Senator Boxer, the name is Tyler Reverend. Why not Senator Clinton? Why not Senator Schumer? Why not Carzine? Why not Dodd? Why is there so much clubbishness in that Senate under something as basic as the right to vote is not protected? And indeed, their own careers are in jeopardy unless we stop this electronic stealing manipulation of votes.
Okay. Now, thank you for joining us so much, Reverend Jackson.
Reverend, we really appreciate it, as always, sir.
Today at 10 o'clock, we'll rally at Lafayette Park, those who are in this area, in the area.
Washington, D.C.
Lafayette Park, in right across the White House at 10 o'clock. We'll be in March at the Capitol. At 1 o'clock is when the gavel will strike.
Okay.
On the House side, Congressman Jackson and Conyers, and they are ready, Stephanie Tubbs Jones. We need several senators, all of them, to be judged by standing up and not standing up today. All of them should be judged by that, not just one, but all of them.
All right, we're going to be reaching out from our end. Thanks again, Reverend Jackson.
Appreciate it.
Take care. That was Reverend Jesse Jackson. Thanks to Wayne Gelman.
Shout out to Wayne Gelman.
I think he calls Wayne on a pretty regular basis.
Well, they're on first name.
Yeah, so. they're buddy.
Wayne, Jesse.
Wayne reached out to Jesse. Did you see he said you're getting to be doing a jam early in the morning?
You have to ask.
But then he unjammed himself.
He just said,
I think there's a lot of people that should stand up. He's very good at unjamming himself. So, look, you can go to morningsedition.com for information on how to contact senators, your senator, a senator, all senators. Since we do have a lead that Barbara Boxer might be the one to do it, obviously Harry Reid, you know, Jackson.
He's talking about it, and Reverend Jackson didn't say categorically that Barbara Boxer was the senator that he and Harry Reid talked about. So there may be an X factor.
Hope, Riley, that what I say is true, that they will all rise
up
in a dramatic, symbolic gesture to right the wrongs of an election system in this country. But wouldn't it just be great? It would
be great. I hope Michael Moore's got a camera somewhere over
there. I would get the political analogy to whatever an erection would be. That would be very exciting. I'm not sure what that would be, but
a political Woody.
Yeah, something. You know, does that officially go? I think I took it there.
Yeah,
and then Riley put it over the top and got right on board the train. So this is good news. It's exciting news. It looks like something might actually happen in terms of, like, when we were talking to John Nichols yesterday. He said that, he doesn't know how much would really, come out of the debate. But just the idea, just to reinvigorate, the Democrats and the progressives and the people that, have been working hard to get this thing on the national map, at least, just to get the conversation going in where it matters, I think is a tremendous thing.
Mark, what's important here is this. These Democrats are not going to stand in the way of Alberto Gonzalez becoming attorney general. Mm-hmm. They're not. They're going to question him. They're going to give him trouble, but they're not going to stand in his way. All right? Mm-hmm. So that's one battle we know already they're not going to fight.
Okay.
They don't need to have two battles. They're too chicken to fight just on the eve of this guy's inauguration. It doesn't make logical sense. It makes more sense for them to stand up here and say to the base of the party,
yeah,
particularly the black community, who witnessed them chickening out in 2000, say, hey, you know what? This time, we get the message. We're standing with you. We're standing with people who have been arguing and talking about this since November 3rd.
Yeah, it's amazing to me that, you know, you can't, I mean, just the way even the polling places were staffed, just the need for volunteers, just that part of this whole fix, and this is a fix that's been in with the Democrats as well, is that, you know, you just let this thing go. It just seems to me that, you know, there should be some sort of federalized way to staff voting places properly, to have enough machines for everybody. And this stuff's been going on for years.
In the language of Lopresto? Hey, that happened.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I remember going to the polling place years ago. Anytime, you're just sort of like, who are these people that are working here? Do they know what they're doing? I mean, it always seems confusing.
There are folks that have been doing it for years and years. They've been doing it the same way for years and years, even though procedures have changed over the years.
Now, you've got connections in the electoral arena here in New York.
Yes.
Now, why do they do it that way? What is the oversight? Is
because
it just incompetence or what?
There is no, first of all, any change that elections boards try to make here in New York immediately wind up in court. They have been in court for over a decade about getting a new machine. That's why they're using the same machines that they used in 1962 here in New York today.
Yeah.
Because every time they've tried to get a new machine in, somebody takes them to court and says, that's not the right machine.
Right. You know, and also, you know, what scares me, though, because I had this reaction to, in Washington State, the governor race. You know,
yeah,
the Republicans are really pushing for to scrap the old vote and have an entirely new vote.
They think it's for Ukraine. That's why.
Well, because it was too close. You can't do that. I mean, there's on some level, unless you can prove that there was some sort of shenanigans at all, you can't just have an entire re-vote just because the party that lost thinks that, you know, that they lost by too thin a margin. They want to, it's just basically saying, we want another shot because we've got a few busloads of people we can get out.
Yeah, and it's amazing that these are the same people, the same party, that wants to gloss over Ohio like nothing happened.
Unbelievable.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, well, hey! Right?
Is that
Ramon?
Right?
I don't know if that was him. You was in and out of here so fast, it made my head spin.
I think he was wearing a cape.
Yeah.
All right, what do we got coming up?
Well, we got the Palm Pilot, apparently. We're going to talk more about the moment of truth, and we're going to talk a little bit about George W. Bush's trip to a certain county in Illinois.
To take away victims' rights.
There you go. When we come back here on Air America Radio. We fight.
On Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition.
Oh, yeah.
Air America Radio. Ramon in a cape just gave me Jeb Bush's Palm Pilot for today. Of course, he is still in Jakarta over there as an emissary of goodwill for his brother, the faux Christian, low monkey, AWOL puppet of the Cheney regime's neocon death cult. Jeb Bush is scheduled for today, 8 a.m. Wake up in Jakarta. Stay on message. Raise national profile. Look presidential. Show compassion and resolve. Keep both chins up. 9 a.m. Meet with. Take your time with these, right? All right, meet now.
No, I'm actually trying to do them.
Oh, okay. He's trying to. 9 a.m. Meet with Indonesian leaders about relief efforts. Note, don't refer to tsunami as something you make with rum and pineapple juice. 10 a.m. Survey damage. Assure locals that America will never stop until we win the war on terrorist surf. 11 a.m. Warm up to locals by telling them about my Florida hurricane experience. Note, I know how bad you must feel. My cable was out for 2.5 hours. 1 p.m., put on a suit, stand behind a podium flanked by Secret Service agents, and once again announce that I'm not running for president in 2008. 4 p.m., call W., assure him that the people are eating up this whole compassion bit. Why didn't we think of this angle before? 9 p.m., drinking game with Colin Powell. Watch W. on CNN. Every time he mispronounces a word, you have to do a shot. Note, this could get ugly. All right, well, let's get into the Bush's assault on victims' rights. The president is in a sort of all-out, full-on, crusade against victims' rights to draw lawsuits against corporations or doctors that have unjustly compromised their health or killed them. Can we hear that sound there, Chris?
This is a global economy. And so our tort system has become a needless disadvantage for American manufacturers and entrepreneurs.
Yeah, right. So what?
Huh?
Tell that to the little girl's intestines were sucked out of a faulty, pool drain. Tell that. Tell it to Barbara Willis, who underwent back surgery 5 years ago, and during surgery, she showed some problems, but the surgeon continued operating for another 8 to 9 hours despite her poor signs. After the surgery, which took 6 to 8 hours longer than expected, the hospital kept pumping fluids into her and then neglected to check up on her for an entire night. You know, she put on 30 pounds of water and died, drowned in her own fluids. Tell that to her, that it's a global economy and we can't have this drain on the system. Denying victims' freedoms, restricting victims' rights.
Restricting victims' rights and is continuing to pressure Congress by using what for him has now become a tried and true political ploy. You go someplace, you demonize the place. Because remember now, they have Americans who have heard of Madison County, Illinois, now know it as a judicial hellhole.
That's because the dummies at the mainstream news outlets have picked up on it, and even do they not realize that even if you put it in quotations, you are reinforcing the frame. It doesn't matter whether that it's a tort reform lobby that created this frame. If you put it in the newspaper, even if it's in quotes, you're doing their bidding for them. It's partisan behavior on behalf of mainstream media because they're lazy.
Now, again, the question that people ought to be asking themselves is this. George W. Bush was governor of a state where juries of people's peers routinely sent people to their deaths. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And George W. Bush and his entire Texas prison system apparatus played a role in that. They had no problem with a jury deciding that someone should die. But now, the same George W. Bush, is going before the American people and saying that there is a problem with juries awarding people money for damages.
Yeah.
How do you reconcile that? It's okay for a jury to decide to kill somebody, but it's not okay for a jury to say that a woman who died because of medical malpractice shouldn't get money.
Right.
That's absurd. It's insane.
Yeah, and it just a lot of the numbers just don't match up. I mean, this is definitely to buffer and also to feed the coffers of the insurance industry, the pharmaceutical industry, any corporation that wants to involve, hurting people in their bottom line with a cap, knowing that if there's a certain number of people they can go ahead and kill or damage or put into a compromising position, as long as it doesn't hurt their bottom line too much, they're willing to pay out whatever is necessary if there's a cap on it. This is a president that does not care about individual human beings. He sees them as just obstacles to creating a corporatized world where corporations are protected over the people that live in the planet.
And some of his own people, most notably Lindsey Graham, himself a trial lawyer, by the way. Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina has called Bush's legislation that he's given to Congress to try and get this done the worst piece of legislation, this part of it, that he's ever seen. The part that puts a $250,000 cap on pain and suffering awards.
President Bush says frivolous lawsuits run up the cost of medicine. That's a quote.
Yes.
Frivolous lawsuits run up the cost of medicine. And that solutions to health care problems were stopped in Congress, quote, because the trial lawyers are powerful in the Senate, end quote. However, the government and academic data concludes that lawsuits have little, if anything, to do with health care costs. According to the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, costs for malpractice lawsuits represent less than 2% of the nation's total health care spending. The tort reform legislation pushed by President Bush would reduce health insurance premiums by less than 0.5%. It's the insurance companies that define the rates for reasons of their own that is not bearing at all on how much malpractice, or how much lawsuits are cutting into their pie.
The insurance companies are, in fact, taking malpractice premiums and investing them in the financial market. The same financial market that Bush wants to invest your Social Security money in.
Yes.
Let's be clear. There's a synergy to what the guy's trying to do. This is not all coming like various strands out of his head. This all rewards people who are among those rangers pioneers who raised $250 or $300 or $500,000 for the Republican Party
at the expense of the working class or people with under the poverty line. You see what they do is like he throws you this $200 check as some sort of tax cut kickback, but he's going to get it on the other side with this crap. I mean, this is like this is even more demonic than that. I don't know how the hell people can believe that a tax cut is going to benefit them in any way, given what they're facing. I mean, you're talking about people whose retirement money is going to be put in private accounts and then moved onto a casino gaming table, that is the stock market, and they're gonna sign off on that. You're talking about people who work for a living, who go out into the corporate world or do manufacturing jobs or run trucks or whatever, and if their truck that's owned by Home Depot, if all of a sudden a box falls on their head, they're only allowed to sue for $10, and that's not even going to recoup their pain?
No. All they're going to be allowed to say is, ouch.
Yeah.
That's exactly what Bush has planned.
It hurts working people, but some of them are so deluded with the idea that this guy is some sort of, you know, mythic religious hero that they no longer see that they're getting screwed.
Yeah. Well, you know, George Lakoff talks about framing. Here's the frame. You're getting screwed. What are you going to do about it?
Nothing. I just want to have a job and be able to go, you know, and I just don't like gay people.
Yeah, I know. And I don't want them to be able to marry. But you know what? People need to be contacting their congresspeople. All of this stuff has to go through the Congress of the United States. And yes, the Democrats are, in fact, a minority. But the fact of the matter is, when Republicans were a minority in Congress, they managed to block a whole bunch of legislation that they didn't like by being smart about it, by horse trading. And we should demand the same thing out of our Democratic members of Congress that Republicans demand of their members of Congress.
That's absolutely right, Mark Reilly. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Madison County. We're also going to talk about why there shouldn't be caps and what happens, you know, which companies have changed their corporate behavior in light of, you know, either, you know, a lawsuit that, you know, brought justice to a situation. I've got a big list of those, and, you know, this will, you know, really flesh this out in an effective way. It's 43 past the hour. You're listening to the Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Reilly.
Yo!
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. The tort reform lobby is entitled them a hellhole, Madison County, because of apparently there were some litigation suits that paid a lot of money. And, you know, whether or not they deserve to be paid out that much money, it doesn't matter to these people. They're just using it as an example. And Bush set up a little dramatic presentation there with a bunch of doctors wearing white coats. You know, my dad is a doctor, was a doctor, still alive, don't get worried, but no longer a doctor really practicing that way. I grew up with a doctor. You know how many times I saw him in a white doctor's coat in my entire life? You want to know how many times?
Tell me.
Granted, I didn't see him that much in general, but, you know, maybe twice. They don't. What do you think? They wear those things out? When the hell are you going to see a doctor in a white coat? When they leave the hospital, they take the white coat off. You know what I mean? I used to see him in surgical scrubs more than I saw him in a white coat. The whole thing's this big propaganda push to deny victims their rights. America's product liability laws are a powerful warning. You have to understand that to even the most audacious wrongdoers that they cannot market and sell products that injure or kill consumers and expect to get away with it. The following, and I'm going to read a few here, are just a few of the safety changes prompted by our liability laws and punitive damages. In other words, supporting victims' rights. Victims, you cannot blame the victim. We got an email the other day after a conversation about this yesterday. Some guy goes, well, what about that woman, that old lady who got $50 million from McDonald's after she spilled coffee in her lap? What about that? Coffee's not supposed to be 500 degrees.
How about this lady in, I guess it was out in St. Louis, in the St. Louis area.
Yeah.
Who said the doctor switched her test results and mistakenly told her she had breast cancer. They amputated both her breasts.
Yeah, like what she should
and
have.
And then she didn't have breast cancer.
Well, here we go. Children. The harmful product was children severely burned by highly flammable pajamas. The corporate misconduct was Rigel, a textile aware of hazard, knew about it, but chose not to treat pajamas with flame retardant chemicals because it would cost them too much, because it would affect their bottom line. And they just assumed, what are the odds of kids spontaneously bursting into flame? The positive change, $1 million punitive award forces unsafe product off the market. Now, if there was a cap on that, if it was only $250,000, why would they change anything? They wouldn't even have to spray the retardant on anyway, see, because then they save money on both sides. It's like, so what if a couple of kids die?
It becomes the cost of doing business. And, Mark, the strange thing about this is that so many Americans, I think, trust these corporations not to make these kind of calculations, not to say, well, hey, you know, if it happens once or it happens, that's just the cost of doing business, that they knew about the hazard but decided not to treat it. Women dying from toxic shock syndrome after using superabsorbent tampons. Playtex knew about it. They disregarded studies and medical reports linking their products to toxic shock.
Right. So here's what they're doing, though, Mark, with the doctors, right, and the malpractice issues. They're hitting people where it really hurts. They're hitting people who are in their illness.
Yeah.
They're hitting people in their fear of getting disease, their fear of something going wrong and them not being able to get the right, response, the right treatment.
Yeah.
You know, already we have some 45 million or so people who don't have health care in this country, right? The 35 or what is it? Like
45.
Right.
You got it right.
All right. So this is an administration that does nothing to help anybody. You know, get insurance or the proper health care. So now they're starting to scare people on another level. They're going to blame the lawyers, you know, and they're going to blame the lawyers on behalf of the doctors, and they're going to blame the lawyers on behalf of other people who may not be victims, and tell those people to blame the victims for trying to get something for nothing. It's a real weird switch they're playing, but they're playing off people's fears.
They're absolutely playing off people's fears, because what they're saying to people is this. You may walk into your doctor's office with an illness one day, and that doctor may refuse to treat you because he doesn't want to get sued. That's what they're trying to play.
And the truth of the matter is that HMOs, insurance company-owned hospitals, tell doctors not to do certain treatments
because
it's going to cost too much. So you've already got doctors who are compromised within the HMO system because of insurance companies calling the shots, because number crunchers are deciding who gets treatment, what kind of treatment they get, based on the numbers of whether or not they will recover or not, or whether or not it's worthwhile on behalf of the insurance company to invest in this patient's health.
Yeah.
So the insurance companies are already calling all the shots. They're the ones that determine how much malpractice insurance should be. And in the HMO situations, they're actually determining who gets what treatment and telling the doctors what to do. It's not about good doctors. Look, my dad has been through this. These HMOs will compromise doctors' ability to give good treatment. And they are basically insurance company-owned hospital situations.
Yeah, and, you know, people ought to understand too, that the insurance companies decide to some extent which of these cases get settled out of court and which of these cases actually go to trial.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is not a matter of every case that's filed ends up going before a jury. Everybody in America, hopefully, knows that's nonsense. Most cases do not, whether they be criminal, civil, or anything else, they don't end up going in front of a jury. The fact of the matter is that these guys are playing this con game to make it seem like all of these cases go before juries, I assume, of drunk citizens who, just because they feel the pain of the victim, say, well, we're going to award them X numbers of dollars. Half of these awards get cut in half by judges after the fact anyway.
Yeah, that is true, but it's still like in my head in is that if you put caps, it's going to start with this malpractice thing, but
yeah.
Ultimately what they want is to allow corporations to do business exactly the way corporations want to do business, with complete disregard for the liability of their products.
Mm-hmm. It creates a corporate oligarchy that, and by the way, Bush has a tax plan. All of the Bush administration's initiatives on the domestic front are meant to help the children of the people that are making out like bandits through all of this, all right? Because they're going to inherit money that they then invest, and what's going to happen? These, the taxes on investment, capital gains and all the rest, there'll be things in the past if Bush has his way.
It's like this whole asbestos thing. You know, this asbestos thing has been going on for years. It's because asbestos, the problem with asbestos is that manufacturers knew of the danger of asbestos for decades but concealed the risk from the public. So there's been millions and millions of dollars in lawsuits around cancer caused by asbestos inhalation, all right? And now because of that, asbestos has been taken off the market in a lot of ways. Well, we talked to Dan Ziegart the other day. He says that there are still asbestos-laden products on the market to this day. It's one of those other things, too. It's like maybe it'll fade. You know what I mean? Maybe, like, we'll just wait a few years and reintroduce the product.
Well, let me tell you something. I am old enough to remember when asbestos was marketed as a good thing for people. It was supposed to insulate you in the event of nuclear attack. I know you didn't go, you're too young to have gone through this, you know, the Cuban Missile Crisis where everybody had to go out in the hall and put their hands over their heads and pretend like a bomb just happened. Asbestos was supposed to be the insulator from this kind of nuclear attack. So asbestos was considered, when I, up until my teens, asbestos was considered a great thing.
I think they tried to pitch it for the Humvees in Iraq. They're like, you know, why can't we just coat these in asbestos? That could probably help out. There's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Get ready, progressives and liberals. Here are your marching orders for today. One, sue Bush in Madison County, Illinois, saying his assault on victims' rights gave you severe emotional distress.
There you go.
Two, praise Alberto Gonzalez, but only because any TV movie made about him will have to star a Latino actor. Three, have tsunami relief party, but don't refer to it as a blowout. Four, organize legal defense fund to,
hold on a minute. Organize the legal defense fund to uphold Motley Crue's right to say the F word on TV.
Yeah, man. Five, today's phrase is dropping into conversation. Oh, sure, Jeb's not running in 2008. He just went halfway around the world to be photographed with disaster victims because he cares. Wake up, sheeple. His foot is in the door, people, and his fat ass is on the way.
Uh-oh, speaking about fat asses on the way, at 9:30 this morning, they're taking up the issue of Alberto Gonzalez. We'll talk about that in the next hour. And we've also got the radio theater. And we're going to talk to a guy who can tell us a little bit about some of this toxicity that's in the air. All coming up for you here on Air America Radio.
Ask your doctor if morning sedition is right for you. Then listen anyway. Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
And you're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Blah, 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 blah.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, tops and bottoms of all kinds, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, but a definite urge to see the senators, all the Democratic senators, rise up today.
Stand up.
In support of John Conyers. Right, Mark Riley?
Stand up.
I had a dream. I had a dream that all of them stood up, and it was a symbolic, dramatic, exciting moment. Why don't they all stand up? I know we've been talking about this all day, but this is the thing to talk about.
This is the month of Martin Luther King's birthday. If you want to make it more than just some sale day at your local retailer, how about calling your congresspeople and your senators, especially your senators all over America, New York, New Jersey, Wisconsin, Ohio, Washington State, California, call them all and get one of them to stand up. All it means is 2 hours worth of hearings in each House of Congress.
It's going to happen.
What's so scary about that?
Exactly. It's going to happen. Hey, Chris, you've got the Reverend Jesse Jackson from the last hour.
Yeah.
Let's hear that.
Senator Reid indicates that he feels reasonably sure that a senator, whose name I shall not disclose now for his or her own purposes, will stand up today. What I'm amazed at is how we have dumbed down expectations. People in New York today should be calling Senator Clinton and Senator Schumer, should be calling the senator over in New Jersey, Corzine and Lautenberg. I mean, 44 senators would make a huge statement to the world. Bush right now, without the challenge, has a kind of moral mandate based upon the numbers. The numbers will not stand up on the scrutiny.
Supports Congressman John Conyers and the House Democrats' drive for fair elections. Okay, they need a single senator, as most of you know, to support their effort in order to require Congress to discuss the issue. The word is that California Senator Barbara Boxer, we don't know, It was funny.
Yeah.
Jackson wouldn't confirm it. The Reverend Jackson wouldn't confirm it. Instead, you know, Riley tried to put him in a pickle, and he made a big list of people that could. He unjammed himself.
Yeah.
But she might be persuaded. You can go to boxer.senate.gov/contact. Also go to the links page on Morning Sedition, and we have information on how you can contact your senator, any senators. Also, in the same light, oppose Alberto Gonzalez. Contact your senator by going to www.senate.gov or, again, to Morning Sedition. .com. We are going to be talking more about Gonzalez.
Hey, get those electrodes off of me.
Here's a little something. President Bush apparently donated $10,000 of his own money to the tsunami relief effort. I wonder if that was money that might have come from a lawsuit. Did you know that as Texas governor, Governor George W. Bush is one of the tort reform movement's biggest proponents? Over his two terms, Bush signed a series of brutal bills that severely reduced injured consumers' rights to go to court. However, when it comes to solving problems involving his own family, Bush heads straight to court. In 1999, Bush sued Enterprise Rent-A-Car over a minor fender bender involving one of his daughters in which no one was hurt. Although his insurance would have covered the repair costs, making a lawsuit unnecessary. You mean that it was a frivolous lawsuit? Bush sought additional money from Enterprise, which had rented a car to someone with a suspended license. In this case, Bush seemed to understand one of the most important functions of civil lawsuits, to deter further wrongdoing. The case settled for $2,000 to $2,500. So maybe that's a little of that tsunami relief money that he donated there.
Yeah, that means he only had to come out of his pocket for eight long.
Huh? Yeah, all right. So here's some other news. CNN will cancel Crossfire. Tucker Carlson, I wish and I hope, is going down. The guy is useless. They say he's a good journalist. He's not a good journalist. He's a bow-tied blowhard who I don't even think believes what he's saying. They're canceling it. I don't know if it was because or instigated by Jon Stewart's appearance on the show, but they are canceling it, and I hope to God that Tucker Carlson is out of work. I want him out of work. I don't like the guy. He's the kind of guy that makes me seethe, but he says he might have a deal with MSNBC. It's not confirmed yet.
No. That NBC seems to be notoriously closed now. But now, well, what's his name was on it? Paul Begala, right?
Yeah, I like Begala.
I like him. He's all right.
Sometimes he's okay. Other times he kind of lays down.
You think he'll stay at the network?
I don't know what these guys do. You know what I mean? To me, they're just clowns. Everybody's just an entertainer. I never saw that show as anything, you know, really informative. It was just a big circus. You
know, I know what
every once do. In a while, it introduced me to representatives that I didn't know, like Frank Pallone was on.
Frank Pallone from Jersey, sure.
The representative from New Jersey, who I was very impressed with as a guy who was very soft-spoken and earnest and very matter-of-fact. And I like it when people like him who are, you know, effective, legislators and they have they know what they need to say. Yeah. And he just basically responded to stupid Tucker Carlson with, very basic facts. It was a beautiful thing because he was talking about putting a global warning system in place against tsunamis and earthquakes or whatnot. And he said it was cost very little. And he thinks that the United States should pay for it.
That's a great idea.
Yeah,
by the way.
Carlson was like, why should we pay for it? I mean, why is it our responsibility? It's got nothing to do with us. You know, that's Indonesia. I mean, why should we pay for it? And Pallone was like, you know why? Because it would cost $30 million.
Yeah, not that much.
So, you know, it's just like, shut up.
Cost
shut
of
up.
A year's worth of your bow ties, pal.
So Begala and Tucker have been shut up. You know, Robert Novak for the, you know, it just takes a lot of their exposure. Novak, too, thank God. You know, thank God. You know, I don't mind putting a sock in that guy's mouth. He'll
still
right.
It seems like CNN, by doing this, is trying to make it sound as though they're getting out of the opinion business. I think, and this is just pure speculation on my part, but I think Tucker Carlson wanted Larry King's gig. See, I think Tucker Carlson for 8:00 prime time. Problem is, Larry King is the highest rated show on CNN, so they're not bumping him anytime soon.
And it's unbelievable because Larry King is 107 years old and
still going surviving on garlic.
Yeah, and he never leaves that chair. They just roll him in the morning. He's literally his suspenders. They have a hook for his suspenders at the back of the chair that they just hook Larry in. He's upright. His elbows are on the table. He goes.
But he used to be married to Angie Dickinson. Don't forget that.
God bless him. You know what I mean? He's been married like three times, I think, isn't he?
Yeah,
He used to smoke like a million packs of cigarettes a day. The guy's a warhorse.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's good. I watch him. I try to learn from him.
Look, there's no doubt about it. I used to listen to Larry King even before he was on television. He used to do a late night radio talk show.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to listen to him because he was just so fair. I mean, he was a very even, balanced kind of guy. Didn't throw people puffballs, but didn't tolerate any foolishness, particularly out of callers.
But he's interesting because, you know, he's very, you know, he's very, it's almost, it's rare that his tone shifts that much. You know, he knows how to be, you know, earnest. He also knows how to be emotional when necessary. But basically, he's very good at staying steady and just teasing people out of the information. Because he's very good at the one-word question. You know, it's sort of like, you getting paid? Yeah, that's not it. It's not a one-word question. But you know what I mean, is that, you know, like he'll just push people along with words.
Yeah.
You know, with very simple, succinct stuff. That's absolutely right. Let me read a couple emails because we're getting some pretty nice emails lately. I put it to, oh, no, I want to read that one. Where is it? Yeah. A note of thanks as 2005 begins. I'm just another 45-year-old Northeastern commuter in the dark who needed to think of how desperately awful the radio culture has become. It was to send a fan note. Your show is so necessary, so energized, so unbeholden. Please keep having those guest experts from the smart fringes. I will give you nothing but compliments. But as for the larger progressive movement, we are dead. Our leaders are dead. There's nothing but stench around our continued flailing against the raging corporate behemoth that lights my home and tolerates my paycheck. I work for the state, in parentheses. But we all desperately need some social change. The Global Change Supercenter gives you both the Entertainer of the Year Award. The Global Change Supercenter.
Hey, is that next to Walmart?
Hey, yeah, it must be. The counter, it's like the anti-Walmart. Here, dig this one. I put it to you guys. My father and my two brothers are all huge dittohead right-wing conservatives, and I am, of course, regarded as the liberal black sheep of the family. Still, there's one thing I share with both my brothers, a love of science fiction. For Christmas, I got my brother, Tom, a DVD box set of Firefly. Not only is this a really fun sci-fi series, but it was originally broadcast on Fox. All right, so he should have no problem with that, right? Actually, I'm told he loved it. So 2 days ago, I finally get his Christmas present to me. Two books, Leadership by Rudolph Giuliani, and How to Talk to a Liberal If You Must by Ann Coulter. Now, knowing my brother's political viewpoints, I deliberately refrained from buying him a DVD of Fahrenheit 9/11 or any number of books that I thought might be informative and interesting. No, I got the guy something I thought he could appreciate and enjoy. So I am accused of overreacting when, upon receiving his gift, I sent him an email telling him that I plan to sell the books to a used bookstore if there's one that will take them and donate the money to the ACLU or maybe MoveOn.org in his name. So I put it to you, am I overreacting? Sincerely, a listener in Colorado. Absolutely not. There's no way you're overacting. That's rude. Your brother's wrong. And I think that you should, you know, disengage yourself from the family entirely.
No, I think next Christmas, think about an exploding cigar, because I'm sure his brother, being a right-wing guy, is probably a big cigar smoker.
But I do like the action that you took, and I'm happy that you did it in his name, and I appreciate you listening. We're going to come back. Chris, we just hear Alberto Gonzalez taking the nomination.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's, where is that? Okay, do it up.
Number two.
Everybody needs to have a good abogado.
Just give me a chance to prove myself.
I got a really good one.
That is a common prayer for those in my community.
That ought to comfort you.
And we'll be back with Alberto Gonzalez and the Dream Diary at 16 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Waging a war of words against stupidity.
Morning Sedition
on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition, America Radio.
Yep.
So I'm going to the therapist finally. Finally, I'm going to the therapist today. Thank God.
This is the best news since I heard Tucker Carlson was going.
It's been 3 weeks. I don't know. I'm just starting to turn around. I think I might be bipolar. Is that possible? No.
Nah.
Okay, here we go. Here's my dream from last night. I'm an accountant for the GAO, and I'm auditing Bush's budget. Three creepy guys with big sharp teeth sit opposite me, smiling and wearing identical suits with big dollar signs on their lapels. I say, now let's see, tsunami relief. It was $15 million, then $35 million, then $350 million. The first one says, it's always been $350 million. The second one says, and that was how much Bush wanted to give, even when he said 15. The third one says, you can't put a number on compassion. And they all smile at each other and nod. Creepy. I say, okay, whatever. Now the war in Iraq. What figure do you have? The first one says, that's $177 million. I say, total. The second one says, no, that's just today, just until 3 p.m., actually. And the third one says, the rates go up at night. The first one says, and you didn't convert those figures into Bush dollars. I say, well, what's a Bush dollar? The second one says, that's a dollar plus a gajillion times three minus bazillion, adjusted for inflation and the barometric pressure. I say, okay, so how much does the war cost in Bush dollars? $12. I say, and how much goes to Halliburton? $6. And then I say, and how much does the new missile defense system? It's $8 if it actually works, $9. And then I say, how are we going to pay for this? Are you appealing the tax cut? They bare their teeth at me. The first one says, absolutely not. The second one says, what are we, socialists? I say, okay, so where are we going to get this money? Where's it coming from? The third one smiles and says, well, from the money tree. It grows money fruit, and then we make money pie. Here, have some money pie. They hand me a slice of money pie. I taste it. Oh, my God. I got to be honest with you. I've never tasted anything that good in my life. It's flaky and rich, and I never want to eat anything else ever again. I look up at their faces, and they're all smeared with green money pie juice. The pie tin is empty. Unacceptable. I say, okay, fellas, I guess I can move a few more zeros around, but first we've got to score some more of that spectacular freaking pie. Let's go. I'm driving. Where do we get it? Where's the Ann Callender's? The Mary Callender's, yeah. I woke up and my bed was filled with warm strips of cheese.
Ooh.
Marie Callender's, that's what I was thinking. Marie Callender's. Yeah? Ooh. You remember Marie Callender's? Do you have that here?
Is that like a...
It's a pie place.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Like, you know,
right.
It's like Heidi's Pies. Yeah, you got to grow up out west, I guess.
Do they have mince?
Huh?
Do they have mince pie?
Sure, I'm sure they do, but they only have like one mince pie.
With or without suet?
Who the hell eats mince pie?
I do!
Yeah?
And everybody in Britain, where I just came from.
So let's get on with this. Let's get on with Gonzalez. Is that where we're at?
Alberto!
Yeah, this dude, you know, I can't believe what is happening, to be honest with you. I think that, when does it starts today, right,
it
Riley?
It starts today at 9:30 this morning.
Okay.
Senate Judiciary Committee.
Yeah.
Passing on Alberto Gonzalez, who will give new meaning to the words Spanish Inquisition.
This guy, he's been with Bush a long time. He was Bush's consigliere
in
Texas.
In
he
Texas.
Was the guy that used to summarize the lawyer's notes, you know, for people who were, you know, given the chair or lethal injection,
lethal
I think,
injection,
there.
Yeah.
He used to be the guy that would tell Bush whether or not this guy was, you know, legit to kill based on, you know, what resistance there was from lawyers and what, you know, what the notes were in terms of were there any questions as to whether or not it was definite whether he was guilty. And there's been reports out today that some Texas lawyers said that they'd submit 40-page briefing notes about a particular criminal who was going to get lethal injection, and Gonzalez would just, you know,
boil it down to a thumbs down.
To like two sentences, give that to Bush, say, okay, do it. This should be fun. We can be there. You know what I mean? Give me front row tickets. These guys never not killed anyone that was accused except for one guy. One guy gets off the hook in Texas. One dude out of all of them, Henry Lee Lucas, is the only guy that was ever, you know, let off the hook in terms of getting the death penalty.
And he's dead anyway.
Well, he died anyways, but it's creepy because he's one of the more demonic sort of, you know, strange presences, you know.
Yeah,
as
he admitted
far as
to killing like 8-10 women, and then they weren't.
Well, he said he killed like hundreds.
Yeah.
All right, this is a demonic guy, you know, a clearly disturbed, demonic, evil person, one of the weirdest serial killers just in terms of the way he looks and just in terms of what he claimed he'd do. And this is the guy that gets off. They kill Carla Faye Tucker, who was actually being an effective minister within prison and reformed herself after years in prison. They killed her even when the Pope said don't kill her.
Yeah.
So they did a state-sanctioned murder against Carla Faye Tucker. But Henry Lee Lucas, they give him a pass. And that's because I think he was an actual emissary of Satan. And I think that this was the day that Alberto Gonzalez and George Bush actually made a deal with the devil. They sat down with the devil in the state house in Austin, Texas, and the devil said, spare Henry Lee, he's my boy.
Yeah,
and
right.
They did. And then because of that, that's why he's president of the United States.
See, you may be right. But I got to tell you, one of the things that Gonzalez did that was very crafty in all of this Texas stuff, and you see this as a common theme in his career with Bush, is that he builds in this sort of deniability into everything he does. So that now their response to this whole thing about whether or not he gave Bush adequate information on these executions and these people on death row was, well, this wasn't the full brief. This was just some background information so that the president might be guided into the further, delving into further the stuff that was given by the lawyers. In other words, this wasn't meant to be a summary of what Bush should do.
Sure.
This is just some background. And you see this time and time again. You see it in terms of the prison, the torture memos. he also says, well, this wasn't really, any definitive information given to Bush. This was just one of a number of options. He builds in this deniability into virtually everything he does.
Well, you know, the new cabinet is going to be, you know, just guys that kiss, women and men who kiss Bush's ass. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, then you're going to be spit out, as was Christy Todd Whitman, who was the head of the EPA. We have Eric Schaefer coming up. He's the director of the Environmental Integrity Project. He gives us a little peek into what went on there, because Christy Todd Whitman has a new book coming out.
Yeah.
So we'll talk to him, and we've got we've got Morning Tradition Radio Theater after this, right?
I'm looking forward to Morning Tradition Radio Theater here on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company players bring you their production of The Shadow Government.
Deep in Washington, D.C., lives a group that has the ability to cloud citizens' minds. What evil lurks in the heart of a shadow government? Mark Maron knows. In our last episode, Mark's search for Colin Powell led him to a hippie commune in Canada, populated by former Bush cabinet members. We rejoin our story as Mark flees Bush's black ops into the steamy jungles of Manitoba.
I beat it into the jungle without a single new clue about Powell. I was more confused than the Democratic Party reading exit polls on Election Day. I was lost and couldn't see Bupkis. Like the president, I needed an exit strategy bad. Just then, someone called my name. I recognized the Jersey accent. It was Bernie Kerik.
What are you doing running around in the middle of the jungle talking to yourself like an idiot? You got a screw loose, kid? You look more confused than George Bush when he found out I had two apartments, a mistress, and friends in the mob.
Kerik. He used to be New York's number one Seamus, but his career went up in flames like a Palestinian bus passenger.
Why are you still talking to yourself, wingnut? I'm right here.
Never mind that. What's a skinny, Kerik? What are you, on the lam?
Keep your shirt on. No, seriously, keep your shirt on. I don't go that way. Man, you ask more questions than the White House press corps back when they had cabones. You want the lowdown? All right, tough guy, here it is. I used to be tighter with Bush than armor plating on a Humvee.
So you weren't that close, is that what you're saying?
You guessed it, gumshoe. That's why he started dishing dirt that the nanny I hired was more illegal than a Halliburton campaign donation. Next thing you know, I'm taking more hits than Fallujah during a presidential campaign.
Tell it to somebody who cares, Kerik. I'm not here to listen to your sob story. I'm looking for Powell, and people keep ducking me like I'm Mary Cheney at the Republican convention. You know something? Spill it.
All right, all right. Look, Powell's been tracking Bin Laden, and I know where at least some of Al-Qaeda's hiding. In my town, the Big Apple. You can start by checking out a clip joint called the Velvet Peanut. Ask for Carmen. She's the one with the snake.
You better be on the level, Seamus. I've had my chain yanked more than a prisoner on Lindy England's cell block.
I'm on the square, kid, but you're getting in over your head.
I can take the heat.
No, I mean you're standing in quicksand.
Hey! Hey, someone throw me a branch. Hey, Kerik! Kerik, come back here! Kerik!
How will Mark make it out of the jungle alive? Can he survive in New York on only $200 a day? And why is there a jungle and quicksand in Canada? Be here when all these questions are answered, and Mark meets a mysterious woman in Bernie Kerik's apartment who says...
Oh, God, is he sleeping with you, too?
Join us next time on The Shadow Government. And remember to tune in later to the Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company Players production of Reverse Racism Theater with Mark Riley and his valet, Mark.
Maron, why do you show up late to the show every day, damn it? You white people bitch, you can't get a job, and then you get one, and you show up late.
I sure enough can't tell me no time, Mr. Riley, but I'll tell you one thing. When I catch me a big old catfish, it's time I was getting home.
What the hell does that have to do with anything?
I don't know, boss. Every time I try to start thinking, my head gets the heebie-jeebies and my brain starts to hurtin'.
That's coming up later on Morning Sedition's Reverse Racism Theater.
All right, there you go.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I've become a tool of the white man.
Wait a minute. 37 past the hour. 38. It just turned 38. I seen it on the clock, boss.
Oh, there you go. Late again? Okay.
All right, so we got a guest on the phone we should talk to. This is he's the director of the Environmental Integrity Project, former director of the Environmental Protection Agency's Office of Regulatory Enforcement. He resigned in 2002 to protest the energy industry's growing role in drafting clean air legislation. He's read Christy Whitman's new book, which is called It's My Party 2, for a book review he's working on. He's on the phone from Washington, D.C. Eric Schaefer, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So what did you think of the book? Is it honest? Does it indict the president? What's up?
Some pretty strong stuff, and I hope people will go out and buy it and read it.
Is it as indicting as Paul O'Neill's book?
I don't think it's quite that strong. That's not Christy Whitman's style, but it's got some pretty straight talk in it.
Well,
she takes on the conservative wing of the Republican Party pretty directly. She calls them social fundamentalists. She says they're a threat to the Republican majority. She uses words like arrogant, bullying, unyielding.
Speaking primarily of the extreme right?
Speaking of the Jerry Falwell,
right.
Robertson, Christian conservative right,
mm-hmm.
and also takes on Novak and that sort of talk, shout, radio
mm-hmm.
crowd
mm-hmm.
for trying to drown out moderates and basically drive the Republican Party in what she says is a pretty extreme direction.
Mm.
How big a problem was this inside the agency she headed?
Pretty big problem. She's got some real interesting things to say there. I mean, my only regret is that she didn't say them before the election, although it's still good to hear it now. She says, let's take global warming. If you remember, she went to Italy right after President Bush was elected
mm-hmm.
the first time and told the Europeans we were finally going to do something about global warming. We were going to put some caps on power plant emissions to try to do something about global warming. She got her chain yanked before her plane even landed back in Washington from that trip, and the White House reversed a campaign commitment they'd made to try to do something about global warming. And she makes pretty clear that when she went in to argue her case to the president, he wasn't there to listen. And, in fact, he didn't listen. He basically told her what the party line was going to be.
So now, who is this book for? I mean, it's a tell-all book, you know, obviously on some level about, you know, the problems with the conservative movement in the Republican Party. But she did campaign for Bush, and she's not, you know, playing to liberals, which I think would be the market for this book. Who's going to buy this book?
That's a good question. I'm going to buy it. I'm going to buy copies for my friends too, because it does confirm a lot of what we were saying and a lot of what we were worried about.
So the market's just former employees?
Yeah, former employees of EPA. No, I think it's going to be bigger than that. I think she's hoping there are enough people out there who are either independents or Republicans who, you know, who might not be committed Democrats, but who are worried about where Bush is taking the country, and she's trying to speak to them.
Mm. Eric Schaefer, I'm curious about something because you worked at EPA. One of the things we're hearing about Alberto Gonzalez, the designee, the attorney general designee whose nomination is going to be discussed today, is that when he came to Washington with George W. Bush, he didn't bring anybody with him. He essentially surrounded himself with people who were already there, who were of a very conservative mindset. What was Christy Whitman's situation? Did she bring anybody? I mean, here was a sitting governor of the state of New Jersey. She didn't bring anybody with her. She didn't bring any of the moderates that she surrounded herself with here?
Yeah, actually, that's a real good question. She did bring people with her, some very loyal staff and some competent staff from New Jersey to work in her front office. The assistant administrators at EPA, that's the second tier of political appointees, they generally came from the White House. They were, with one or two exceptions, not her picks, and particularly the head of the air program at EPA was a White House pick. But I think what comes through in the book is it kind of didn't matter who was sitting in the chairs at EPA, because at least on energy issues and on Clean Air Act issues, it was the White House making the calls, and she's very clear about that.
Well, let me ask you a question about your experience there and why you left, and also like why she was sort of pushed out. I mean, she went there to Italy and made this statement. I have to assume she just didn't pull it out of the air. I mean, somebody gave her – I mean, I know I remember reading about this in Paul O'Neill's book, I think, but if you could recap a little bit of why, you know, why when she got back – she was reprimanded and pushed out. And what exactly happened with you over there?
She's really, that's really worth reading the book. She makes clear that the president's commitment in the campaign to do something about global climate, and specifically to put a lid on power plant emissions and other emissions that cause global warming, wasn't an accident, that it wasn't an afterthought.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't something buried in a memo. It was in the campaign briefing book, and, you know, it was repeated in several other documents. So she said she had it on pretty good authority, and she did some checking on it before she went to Europe to confirm that was the position.
Mm-hmm.
While she was there, Jesse Helms and some other right-wingers in the Senate got excited about the statement she was making and hit the White House with the industry behind them saying, what is this crazy woman doing, and you need to turn this around really quickly or we're going to be stuck having to do something about emissions. And when she got back, it turned out the White House had already written a letter to this right-wing group saying we are going to, essentially reverse our position. They didn't put it that way, but they said we're not going to do anything to set a cap on emissions, and they made that very clear. What she says in the book is she passed Dick Cheney in the hallway, and he was waving a letter, which turned out to be the letter that went to the Senate telling them no action on global warming, don't worry. That's a letter she never saw and she never read.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of, shocking, really. You've got the head of the Environmental Protection Agency on a major issue that affects the health of the whole planet, you know, coming back from Europe, having a position handed to her, and then having the statement of that position sent up to Congress, that she never saw. I speaking bluntly, think that was a point when she should have stepped down.
Look, Eric, we want to continue this conversation. We have one more quick question, but we got to take a break. I want to ask you about this meeting that took place in Arizona.
Yeah, the Western Business Roundtable. Actually, it's ongoing. I think it's yesterday, today, and tomorrow.
Can we address that when we come back a little
sure
bit?
Sure thing.
All right, well, and we also want to take some calls, 866-303-2270, because we're going to talk to Eric for a little bit, and then we're going to talk to you guys. So come back. It's 45 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Call 866-303-2270.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Welcome back. It's 50 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We'll be taking some calls in a second, 866-303-2270, just a couple at the end of the hour here. We're finishing up with our guest, Director of Environmental Integrity Project, former Director of the Environmental Protection Agency's Office of Regulatory Enforcement, which he resigned from in 2002. Eric Schaefer is still with us.
Eric, this meeting that's going on under the auspices of the Western Business Roundtable, where Bush environmental officials and senior members of Congress are speaking to these folks from various and sundry industries that are actually regulated environmentally in some cases, is it a great leap of faith to think that they're trying to look to get some stuff relaxed here in terms of regulations? Is this the kind of thing that drove you nuts when you were at EPA?
Yeah, why else would they be out there? I mean, this is kind of a depressing phenomenon where the guys who were supposed to be protecting public health in the agencies go out and schmooze and play golf with the people they're supposed to be regulating. And sure, they're there to talk business, and you kind of know what the business lobbyists want. And yeah, you can expect that they're pressing to have those rules relaxed. That's what they're paid to do.
Isn't this a theme of the entire administration in every one of these agencies? I mean, the FDA, the USDA, all of them are selling themselves out to business lobbies, right?
Yeah, they don't make any secret of it. We've always had a revolving door problem in government, but it's extreme in this administration. You know, you had the guy who was writing the Medicare rules rotate right out and go to work for the industry. As soon as he finished writing the rules, we saw the same thing at EPA. The chief of staff for the air program, immediately after the ink was dry on rules relaxing the requirements for the power companies, went out and worked for the power companies. So that is what's going on.
It's a pretty grim, slippery slope, isn't it? I mean, pretty soon the individual people are not just going to matter at all.
No, it's really true. There's just not enough distance between people who are doing the regulating and people who are regulated. I mean, you know, it's not about being anti-business. You've got to be fair, and the industry guys have some very useful and interesting things to say, but when you're in these government jobs, you need to have an arm's length relationship, and we're losing that.
Well, you know, thanks. I really appreciate you talking to us, Eric Schaefer.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Eric.
You have a good day.
Have a good morning.
Okay, thank you. That was Eric Schaefer, Director of Environmental Integrity of the Environmental Integrity Project, former director of the Environmental Protection Agency's Office of Regulatory Enforcement. Give us a call if you so desire. 866-303-2270 is our phone number, 866-303-2270. I guess, you know, coming up, you know, it just it irritates me, Riley, that, you know, I guess I was, you know, jaded or naive before. But, like, after reading Fast Food Nation, after talking to people like him, after seeing the way this administration behaves and the way all these agencies that are put into place, that were put into place theoretically to protect the people from being screwed over by any number of businesses, all of them are completely corrupt and bought out by lobbyists.
Well, they're trying to redefine what these agencies are. As I believe, as a prelude to getting rid of them forever. This is part of the, you know, there are people in Congress, there are people in Bush's support camp who would just as soon not see an Environmental Protection Agency. They'd rather it simply not exist. Why? Because it gets in the way of business.
Yeah, but see, like, but I keep coming back to the fact is that these idiots have to live here. Their families have to live there. Their kids have to live here. Their grandkids theoretically are going to live here. What the hell are they thinking? Are they that short-sighted to the point where they just really don't think anything's going on? Are they that willing to, you know, gamble with the future of the world because of greed? I mean, I guess they are, but for some reason I thought at least some of them, as evil as they may be, might be intelligent on some level in terms of having a little foresight, for God's sake.
But here's how they're stupid, Mark. The environmental regulations that exist in this country, okay, throughout the Clinton years, did not impede business. Business didn't go, people didn't go out of business because I'm overregulated. That's nonsense. That's what they want people to believe. What these business interests now want, because they see a friendly guy in the White House. Dick Cheney had them all in 2000, just, you know, during the that task force thing.
Uh-huh.
Now they're all sitting back saying, well, gee, you know, now we've got an open book. We've got the ability to do prison. We want to strip mine half of California? Not a problem. If we want to go out to, you know, up in Alaska and drill for oil in land that's supposed to be protected by law, no problem. We'll change the law.
Well, where the hell are they all going to go? Are they having NASA do
biospheres.
Real estate speculation
underground.
On Mars? Underground biospheres? Yeah, I know, but still that seems impractical, doesn't it?
It's impractical, but these folks are only practical with regard to their own bottom line. I don't even think they care that much about their future.
I really believe you know, they just don't think that it's going to get that bad. They just assume that all of this is some sort of, you know, liberal, ideological, ridiculous BS, and they just don't think that it could possibly get bad. They don't see it as being bad. They're insulated. They're greedy. They only care about their own. They don't get out into the world much. If they do, they're just being shuffled around in limos and, you know, waving and touching people. I mean, they just don't think that it's going to get as bad as scientists project, as is clearly evident in the food supply. Is clearly evident in the way, you know, pharmaceutical companies kill people with neglect, approved neglect by the Food and Drug Administration.
Yeah.
You know?
You're absolutely right. And I mean, we have got to be aware of what this administration is doing on a broad and grand scale. Each one of these stories we talk about, Gonzalez, this whole energy thing, all of these different, the conduct of the war in Iraq, they all have a common point. And that common point is the gross incompetence of the people who are now running our country.
Nasty. Jim, listening to KQKE in San Francisco. Good morning. What's up out there?
Hey, Jim.
Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. Last night I was trying to get through to Senator Boxer.
Yeah.
And the phones were jammed. I just couldn't get through. So I'm just holding off a little while because it's like 5 o'clock in the morning here.
Yeah.
And 8 o'clock there.
Yeah.
Holding off a little while, and going to try and get through again.
Okay, that's good news. That's
keep trying,
news.
Man. Keep trying. I believe she's got a spine.
Yeah, her number, if you need it, is at morningsedition.com. Thanks for your call, Jim. Appreciate you listening. At morningsedition.com, there's information about how to support Congressman John Conyers and the House Democrats' drive for elections, for fair elections. We need one senator. I have a dream that they're all going to stand up. I don't know if that's possible. They got nothing to lose. So if you're a senator and you're a Democrat and you're listening, come on. Just call your buddies and let's all stand up. You got, if you you do it all as one, if you work as one, you know, what's going to happen? It's only going to be good. But you can go to boxer.senate.gov/contact for Boxer, for Barbara Boxer. But you can also go to morningsedition.com to contact for information on contacting any number of senators. Jesse Jackson said Harry Reid.
Harry Reid says that there's somebody thinking
Kennedy,
about
Bird.
Standing up. How about 44 years?
Mm-hmm.
How about it?
Okay.
In the next hour of Morning's Edition, we got a lot of stuff going on. We've got the Palm Pilot. We're going to talk to more of you on the telephones. We got the liberal agenda. Hey, we got so much stuff, we don't know what we got here on Air America Radio.
It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Blah, 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 blah.
Game over, man. Game over.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes of all kinds. How are you all? Good morning, Democratic senators. Please, please, for the love of country, all of you, stand up. Stand up today for John Conyers. Stand up. Give him the support he needs to get a debate going about election reform in this country. Please, you can do it. We got word from the Reverend Jesse Jackson earlier today. Can we just hear that, Chris?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't know we had to do numbers. Okay.
Okay.
Senator Reid indicates that he feels reason to assure that a senator, whose name I shall not disclose now for his or her own purposes, will stand up today. But I'm amazed at how we have dumbed down expectations. People in New York today should be calling Senator Clinton and Senator Schumer. Should be calling the senator over in New Jersey. Corzine and Lautenberg. I mean, 44 senators will make a huge statement to the world. Bush right now, without the challenge, has a kind of moral mandate based upon the numbers. The numbers will not stand up on the scrutiny.
Dumbed down expectations. I like that, Mark Riley.
I do too, man. I mean, look, in the Ukraine, did they just roll over when the guy fixed the election? Not Yushchenko. Yushchenko's the guy who eventually won. The other one.
Yeah. We're going to spend too much time trying to figure it out.
We'll
come back to
we'll
it.
We'll come back to it.
I'll let yourself, beat yourself up on the break.
Yeah. The Ukrainians stood up.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
They went to Kiev. They got in front of 200,000 and said, look, this result will not stand. And you know what? It didn't.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, Jesse's got some information that he didn't quite want
Yanukovych,
share with us.
That's his name.
Yanukovych, good for you.
I would have beat myself to
thank
death
God.
In the next race.
Thank God we've nipped that in the bud. So also today at 9:30, the confirmation hearings of Alberto Gonzalez begins. Can we hear him accepting the confirmation or the nomination, Chris?
Everybody needs to have a good abrogalo.
Just give me a chance to prove myself.
I got a really good one.
That is a common prayer for those in my community.
That ought to comfort you.
That ought to comfort you.
Yep.
So this guy, you know, obviously we're going to be talking about this for a few days. As we said before, he was, you know, his consigliere in Texas. He helped Bush kill people. He helped Bush do his state-sanctioned murder gig.
But and he now, also, he was prepared, and I think is still prepared, to sign off on circumventing the laws against torture, international laws and domestic laws.
Well, there's a lot of ways to do
torture.
It now. I mean, he told Bush, this is in 1997, he told Bush he could ignore international law when he was still a governor.
Yep.
In a 1997 memo, Gonzalez justified noncompliance with the 1969 Vienna Convention, which was designed to ensure that foreign nationals accused of a crime are given access to legal counsel by a representative from their home country. Gonzalez sent a letter to the U.S. State Department arguing that the treaty didn't apply to the state of Texas because apparently Texas is its own country.
There we go.
Which was not a signatory to the Vienna Convention.
Well,
2 days
so
later.
So the state of Texas didn't sign, so it doesn't matter to Texas.
But this, of course, was just so they could kill somebody.
Yep.
2 days later, Texas executed Mexican citizen Irineo Tristan Montoya despite Mexico's protestations. that Texas had violated Tristan's rights under the Vienna Convention by failing to inform the Mexican consulate at the time of his arrest. Now, this is also going to be something that they do more often. An extension of this idea is that no matter what he says about the Geneva Conventions being quaint or outdated or anything else, we talked to a guy, we talked to the ex-Admiral Jag, the ex-Admiral of the Jag, John Hudson.
Yeah, John Hudson,
on Morning Sedition the other day. Can we hear that, Chris? Can we hear number four? Okay. We talked to him about this, that the idea of the enemy combatant, that the Geneva Conventions applied, you know, in on paper. This is what the lawyers do. They parse the language.
That's
and on
exactly
paper,
what they do, yeah.
On paper, it was only applying to nations' uniformed armies. So they designed this word, enemy combatant, this the insurgency, these that don't really are not necessarily affiliated with the nation, as a loophole through which they could take away, you know, the Geneva Convention protections. And, well, let's hear that that from John Hudson.
I believe that Judge Gonzalez fails utterly to understand the role of the United States. We have stood for generations upon generations as the primary advocate for the rule of law and human rights. And now we find ourselves in a position where we're looking for ways to evade those obligations. And I think that is a huge misstep of historical proportions. And I think that it imperils our troops and makes us less safe.
That was Admiral John Hudson, former Navy JAG. And he, I think, is going to be testifying. They're asking him, the commission, the nominating committee, what do you call it, the committee who approves of Gonzalez?
Oh, the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Senate Judiciary Committee is going to be talking to John Hudson, who talked to us a couple days ago. It's just fascinating to me that there's other ways that they're going to do this. Even if he says that he's going to pull back on torture, which he is to...
Oh, he'll do that.
Yeah, but they can outsource it through extraordinary renditioning. That what they do is that they can literally find, you know, countries that are willing to get into a relationship with the United States because they already are or they want to be in one, who will, they hold these threats off of people. Like, you know, if they capture somebody, they said, well, if you don't play ball with us, we're going to send you to Egypt. And you know what the Egyptians do with their prisoners. So and they can do literally outsource the torture. And the other problem with, you know, throwing aside the Geneva Conventions that John Hudson mentioned to us the other day was that essentially, if you do that, if we don't hold the standard, if we aren't standard bearers, that gives the enemy or other countries the impetus to sort of go, well, if they're not going to do it, we'll show them what torture is.
Yeah, and if they ever get a hold of an American, that's precisely what they'll do.
But so it makes it more dangerous.
It makes it more dangerous. And see, Gonzalez also has a little problem with a domestic law here, too, the 1996 War Crimes Act, which mandates criminal penalties, including, in some cases, the death penalty for any U.S. military or other personnel who engage in crimes of torture. Gonzalez was trying to do a legal end run around the 1996 War Crimes Act because that means they could be tried domestically in domestic courts of law. Gonzalez, and I hate to say this, but Gonzalez is acting much like the lawyers for Balco or the lawyers for Barry Bonds or some of these guys that are involved in the steroid scam. Well, I didn't know what it was. It was flaxseed oil.
Right.
And I didn't know it was a steroid.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same kind of logic. It's the same kind of legalese, by the way, that Americans hate about the justice system because they think it allows guilty people to walk.
Mm-hmm.
And that's precisely the kind of language that Alberto Gonzalez was trying to parse to see to it that George W. Bush would bear no responsibility if people did go beyond the limits of the law.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Gonzalez is about.
He's one of these guys that, you know, obviously he's going to be passed. He's going to be questioned, but he's going to be, you know, pushed through. And he's one of these cats that, you know, Bush has had around him for years. He's like, he's part of Bush's brain team.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't have much of a personality on his own. He's kind of a mousy guy. It's hard to believe that he ever was an effective a lawyer in a courtroom. I don't know if he even was, but you know, there are people that Bush surrounds himself with. He surrounds himself with people that really, you know, function as his mind because he is incapable of having any vision or any real sort of policy thoughts on his own.
But you know what? He's cunning. Think about this.
No, that's exact. But that's his job.
He's
the salesman.
But think about this for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Who would do the prosecuting under the 1996 War Crimes Act? Guess who?
Who?
The Justice Department.
Right.
Who is Alberto Gonzalez going to be put in charge of?
The Justice Department.
Ka-ching. Simple as that.
Got it.
He's got his guy. There's no way in the world any of these people. If there was evidence that George W. Bush personally applied the electrodes to the NADs of an Iraqi, you think Alberto Gonzalez would prosecute him for that?
No.
No.
No, he'd probably shake his hand.
Shake his hand at night job.
And say, ooh, better wash him first.
See, you're no good. Hey,
did I just go to Rileytown?
I think you might well have.
So I'm just happy that Kalo didn't bring in another, you know, Costco-sized bag of jerky today. That was ridiculous. I felt ashamed. I couldn't even eat it on the air. I mean, but I did eat plenty of it. It was like this big bag of Mad Cow Twizzlers.
Hey, let me tell you something. This whole studio smelled of meat.
Yeah, and you don't eat meat.
I don't eat red meat. No.
That's the problem with Chavez. Outside of just the, Walmart and Costco, I think Costco is one of the bad guys, aren't they?
I don't know.
You know, just the idea of the warehouse-sized food places, that you always get a bag the size of a truck, and when you have a compulsive eating thing like me, you end up with a colon full of beef jerky. Thanks, Kalo. I appreciate that.
Anytime, buddy.
So we're going to come back with some legitimate questions that we have for Alberto Gonzalez. During these hearings, and much more. We're going to be taking your calls later in the hour about the Conyers action and the senatorial support that we need, and many more things. Okay, so it's 16 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Courtesy of Air America Radio.
That's right, it's 21 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Yes, it is.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Costco is one of the good guys.
Yeah.
I went to ChooseTheBlue.com. So you can go check that out if you haven't checked that out. Most of you people are hip to that. One of the bloggers, because I checked in with the blog. Yes, I did, for the first time in a couple weeks during the show. I went to the blog, and sure enough, somebody said, Costco, good guy.
Yeah.
You can blog at MorningSedition.com. We're inviting new people to the blog. Not meanies. Please, no meanies. No, you can spare. If you're a troll, you can spare them the aggravation, because there's a pretty nice little community of people out there generally. Occasionally it gets a little chaotic and people get mad and go away for a little while and then they come back. But not that I know. Not that I'm a blog biatch. Here's the Palm Pilot for today that came in earlier. Ramon, we're wearing a cape, brought this in. This is Jeb Bush's Palm Pilot, who he is still in Asia. 8 a.m. Wake up in Jakarta. Stay on message. Raise national profile. Look presidential. Show compassion and resolve. Keep both chins up. 9 a.m. Meet with Indonesian leaders about relief efforts. Note, don't refer to tsunami as something you make with rum and pineapple juice. 10 a.m. Survey damage. Assure locals that America will never stop until we win the war on terrorist surf. we do this twice. Like, and Riley laughed a lot the first time, but now it doesn't all come out a whole laugh. It's like, he still laughs, but it's like...
What if it doesn't sound? It's not like I'm cutting cheese in here. Right?
Oh, boy, that was definitely... All right, here we go. Let's finish the pop pilot. 11 a.m. All right, here we go. 11 a.m., warm up to locals by telling them about my Florida hurricane experience. Note, I know how bad you must feel. My cable was out for 2.5 hours. 1 p.m., put on a suit, stand behind a podium flanked by Secret Service agents, and once again announce that I'm not running for president in 2008. 4 p.m., you did that perfect. 4 p.m. Now you're thinking about it.
Yeah, right.
All right, 4 p.m., call W. Assure him that the people are eating up the whole quote-unquote compassion bit. Why didn't we think of this angle before? 9 p.m., now I'm rushing it because I don't want to make the poopy noise in the mic again. 9 p.m., drinking game with Colin Powell. Watch W on CNN. Every time he mispronounces a word, you have to do a shot. Note, this could get ugly.
There you go.
All right, let's do these questions for Gonzalez, because I know there's a lot of questions that, people want to ask, things like, are there any circumstances under which you believe the President of the United States could legally authorize torture? Has your position on the Geneva Convention changed since evidence of widespread detainee abuse at U.S. prisons was uncovered? If not, which provisions of the Geneva Conventions do you still consider quaint to use your word, or obsolete, to use your word. Maybe a question like this: in your view, what limits did the September 14th joint resolution passed by Congress place on which countries the president could invade? Or, and maybe questions like this: would you consider spending the holidays with my relatives as torture? Or perhaps maybe a question like, I got a question. How about this one? Does this hurt? How about this? Does this hurt? How about a little of that? How about this? Does that hurt? Hey, do you think if you were a regular-sized man, you would be so pissed off? Do you think that? How about this question? How did Bush convince you to agree to this? Electrodes on your genitals. Forced masturbation. How did that happen? Wait, one more time. Does this? How about that? Does this? Anything? Am I getting? How about that? Does this hurt? How about two of them? Three. How about that? Hey, who's your favorite desperate housewife? How about that question? Are we going to hear that one? How about this one? As for the Democrats who are opposing your appointment, what should you do? What would you do to them if you got them in a locked room? A little of this? Huh, you bastard? Come on. How about that? Would you describe yourself as the boss from hell, to quote, huh? Anything? Nothing? Last question. What about this? Anything? How about that? A little of this? How about a little of that? All right, anyways.
And we still didn't get a chance to ask him anything about your good friend, Bernie Kerik.
Yeah, what about that, Riley? You sort of called that one. You said we're assuming that there are going to be some questions about Kerik.
You would have to think. Alberto Gonzalez vetted Bernie Kerik's nomination to be Homeland Security Chief. He has said publicly that he, quote, grilled, unquote, Bernie Kerik for hours about his, and still he wouldn't talk. I mean, and apparently, after all of this grilling, he didn't find out about the mistresses, he didn't find out about the condo thing, he didn't find out about the issue of, not even the nanny issue, which was the simplest one of them all. Didn't find out about any of these things after spending hours grilling Bernie Kerik. Now,
that's because Gonzalez is secretly, and not so secretly, he's a wuss. He has to subcontract his torture. That's why. It's guys like him, they're just sort of like, they're sort of Eichmann-y kind of guys. You know, the guys are sort of, you know, hand-wringing, you know, smarty pants. As you're like, ooh, go ahead, hit him again. Oh, that must have hurt, hit him again.
Yeah, we'll get the information.
Yeah. So I guess he didn't have someone else in the room with him when he was talking to Kerik. And what's that guy going to do up against Bernie Kerik?
Bernie Kerik, hey, don't ask me anything else, all right? Yeah. Don't ask.
I got friends in a construction business.
That's right.
Yeah.
You don't want to end up under a goalpost at Giant Stadium, all right? I mean, look, Gonzalez knew that George W. Bush was behind Bernie Kerik. Why? Because Rudy Giuliani, his boy, was behind Bernie Kerik. So, you know, Alberto Gonzalez was not going to be the one to stop the train.
Right.
Even though he knew that the train was headed off the track.
Yeah, what were they thinking?
I don't know what they were thinking. And see,
I love it when they make mistakes like that. It's beautiful.
But the American people ought to be asking, what are they thinking? And what are they thinking making this guy Attorney General?
Mark, the American people are sleeping.
I know.
You shouldn't bother the American people when they're sleeping.
You got a firecracker, an M80 or something? Maybe we can wake them up. Yeah, that's it.
I got one of these.
Yeah. Oh!
Wake up, America.
Come on, man. You're getting boned. What are you going to do? Huh? You're going to stand up?
Oh,
what's
boy.
Going on here?
Oh, I don't know. But I think that sounded good in a way.
Oh, yeah, it did.
So we're going to take some calls. Is that the deal?
Yeah, man. Why not?
We're going to talk about John Conyers. What are you guys doing out there? You made some calls to your senators. How are you feeling about everything? You feeling as juiced up as I am? Are we going to get those senators to stand up? What do you think, Riley?
I hope so. Listen, Barbara Boxer, they said it. The lines were jammed last night. Let's get them jammed again today.
866-303-2270. 866-303-2270.
And this is Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Yes, Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. We got some calls lined up. We'll be taking a few more at 866-303-2270. Let's go to Ted in Nebraska first. Ted.
Good morning, Mark and Mark.
Hi.
Once again, the liberals are completely wrong about Alberto Gonzalez.
All right.
Sore losers, and this is a partisan witch hunt.
I hate this guy.
You people have never been able to...
Oh, no, I hate when... Help me, Riley. Oh, my God. Oh, no, it's happening. My thoughts are starting to change. I'm becoming him. Oh, no.
Hell, Pennsylvania.
Live from Radio Halliburton, it's Reich and Early, the conservatives' way to wake up with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good morning, neocons! 20 after the hour here on Radio Halliburton. Remember, if somebody's hurting, it's Halliburton. Bush, 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 everywhere. There's W. Bush. Oh, oh, I'm gonna, oh my, and Daddy Bush. Oh, I'm gonna, oh my, and there's Jeb. Oh, man, this is great. Oh, it's an extreme Bush party, and W invited the whole clan. Daddy Bush is back, and this time it's personal. Eat broccoli, liberal meteorological anomaly. And then Brother Jeb is out east with the noodle slurper, showing them how a real man deals with a little wind. Whoa, look out, bad tsunami coming out of me. Somebody light a match. Hey, what's Bill Clinton doing here? He must have heard me say Bush party. Well, Bubba does have lots of experience in wet, nasty places. Am I right, people? Am I right? Hey, Billary, when you go over there, don't forget to bring Monica's blue dress to mop up the sea foam, loser.
Game over, man.
Meanwhile, back here at home, W's doing a little tort reform, so sue me, Patrick Leahy. Mandate. Oh, boo-hoo, that nasty asbestos made me sick. Is there a personal injury lawyer in the house? Where's John Edwards? I got a settlement for you, liberal gold. How about liberal gold bricks, courtesy of Mark the Shark, for your pain and suffering? This court awards you punitive damages of... There you go. Don't spend it all in one place. Court adjourned. Next time, bring a receipt, whiners. Hey, it's 22 after the hour. Let's take a call. You're on the air, caller.
Limousine liberals, gun control.
That's
free
right.
Hugs.
That's right. Right you are, caller. Sandra Bullock should be thrown in jail for giving those lazy foreigners $1 million. Why should we be impressed by some Hollywood liberal who can't even take her top off in one lousy movie? How about giving us a little charity, Sandy? Show off those bad boys or shut up. That's right. It's 24 after the hour. Time for the neocon power weather forecast. Uh-oh. Looks like gathering Democratic thunderclouds over the Alberto Gonzalez confirmation hearings, but the touchy about torture crowd won't rain on this Liberty Parade. The forecast for Alberto, smooth sailing. Hey, Democrats, you're guilty of crimes against humanity. Stick around, neocons. We'll be back with Toby Keith.
Don't touch that dial, Patriot. We'll be back with Right and Early.
Oh. Wow.
You okay, man? You all right?
Did I pass out again?
Oh, man.
I hate when that happens. What happened? I black out. I should be on medicine for that.
Wow.
Hey, Ginger in Forestville, California. Good morning, Ginger.
Hey, Ginger.
Hey,
hi. How are you? No, that's not a good connection. Sorry, Ginger, you were breaking up.
Yeah.
Not good radio. Rob in Paramus, how are you?
Hey, Rob.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good. What's up, man?
Well, I wanted to comment on the whole Bernie Kerik thing. I mean, everybody in New York knew that he had mob connections. It wasn't like a big secret or anything.
Yeah.
And I wonder if they didn't just throw him out there to kind of just distract when they finally did, when they put Alberto Gonzalez out there, you know, because any time that they've been talking about Bernie Kerik during the confirmation, there's going to be time that they're not talking about torture and all that stuff.
Yeah, I wonder. It doesn't quite add up, does it, Mark? Thanks for your call,
no,
Rob.
Let's put it this way. They got enough on Gonzalez, it would seem to me, that if Democrats were a majority in the Senate, they might have a reasonable chance of at least staying, if not blocking, his nomination. The fact is, they're going to go over all of this stuff. They're going to deal with Kerik. They're going to deal with torture. But in the end, they're going to pass him through.
Right. But it just doesn't seem that Kerik would have been the smokescreen. Do you think?
Look, Kerik was a direct pipeline from Rudy Giuliani. That's where Bernie Kerik sprung from.
Sure.
That was, that was something Bush, you know, Bush had Giuliani out on the stump for him, particularly in some of those key states that Bush ended up winning. And, you know, as payback, Giuliani said, look, I don't want a job. Give my man this job.
Yeah.
And Bush essentially, okay, fine. And
he gave
the job of figuring out whether Kerik could take the job to none other than Alberto Gonzalez. And Gonzalez fell down on the job.
Okay, so that wouldn't didn't necessarily make him look good. It was a good idea, though. Yeah, maybe you're right. I mean, who are we? We're just a couple of guys thinking, out loud here. And thanks for your call. Yeah. But what we're trying to do is I'm reaching out to Democratic senators, if any of them are listening, which I'm sure they do, of course, because I can tell by the number of them that call us so frequently.
Yeah.
But you got to stand up. Everyone's got to stand up. You got nothing to lose. All 44 of you should just stand up. Be at one. Be united. Be make a statement. Let the debate unfold a bit, even if it doesn't mean, if it doesn't facilitate any change at this point in time. It would certainly give all of us a political, boner?
Yeah, there you go. Look, I mean, we need one, okay? It's time for the Democrats. If people are going to believe that the Democrats are going to reinvent themselves, reinvent the party, and actually go out and win some elections, now is the time to start. Maybe blocking Alberto Gonzalez is too much to ask, but standing up with one of your fellow members of Congress is not too much to ask.
That's right. Early in Orlando, how are you, buddy? What's up?
Hey, Early.
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you guys doing this morning?
Okay,
good.
Man.
Great. I just wanted to say that I tried to call Bill Nelson. I live live here in Orlando.
Uh-huh.
Tried to call his Washington number is full, but the Orlando office is accepting calls for people from Florida who want to call in, who are listening, and want to tell Bill Nelson to stand up for us today.
What's that number? Can you give
it to
us?
That number is 407-872-7161.
Thanks, buddy.
Please call.
Yeah. All right, we appreciate it.
All right, man. Pam in Brighton Beach, or Brighton, Michigan. Sorry, not Brighton Beach. How are you, Pam?
Hey, Pam.
Brighton Beach would be lovely. It's snowing like crazy.
Well, it's raining there.
Oh, wow, yeah, it's raining in Brighton Beach.
I wish it was snowing here. I'd rather snow than rain.
Yeah, right.
What's on your mind, Pam?
Well, it's just the Senate thing. I'm kind of holding my breath until 1 o'clock today. I know myself and a lot of our people that helped work for Kerry in this election in this area called and emailed Carl Levin and Debbie Stabenow yesterday and said, look, John Conyers is our hometown guy,
Yeah, it'd be nice to have a Michigan senator stand up, right?
Yeah, maybe Debbie's got us that. I don't know about Carl.
Yeah, maybe she's got the cajon and some of the rest of them don't, huh?
That's right, and the other one that I think would be a good one is Ted Kennedy. He's got nothing
to
lose.
Right, that's what I said yesterday. What about Byrd and Kennedy? What do they got to lose?
Hey, man, Mark Maron defined it as beginning, though, Pam. There is safety in numbers. If all 44 Democrats in the United States Senate stood up at the same time, how would they take action and make retribution against any one of them?
It would be a beautiful thing.
I hope you're right. Are you a little disappointed in John Kerry?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
because
all.
I mean, I this would be a great opportunity for him too. I think, and
he's
not
out of the country.
I know he's not even here.
Well, couldn't he send a video? I don't know.
Pam, appreciate your call.
Thanks, Pam.
Be careful in the snow. 866-303-2270 is our number. I guess we'll take a break now and reline these phone banks.
Bunch of people holding on, so we'll get to them.
Okay. We're talking about John Conyers. We're talking about the Senate Democrats standing up. We want your experience. If you've gotten the information we need, please share it with us. 866-303-2270. It's 43 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. We can't do it without you. Call us at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. Right here on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, let's land this thing. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Let's make sure that we have this in context, Mark, and set this up. Congressman John Conyers is going before
a joint session of Congress. That means both the House and the Senate at about 1 o'clock, between 1 and 1:30 this afternoon. This will be, a joint session of Congress at which Congressman Conyers will, and by the way, the purpose of the session is to certify George W. Bush as president of the United States, something that will happen no matter what John Conyers does here.
Right.
But what John Conyers is going to do is stand up and say, look, we have this report. I forgot how many pages long it is, detailing problems in the state of Ohio with the vote. And we don't think that the Ohio electors, the people from the state of Ohio that will give the presidency to George W. Bush, should be heard and should be allowed to make that vote until we deal with these issues.
What would it take? 2 hours. Why can't these people just all stand up together, all 44 Democratic senators? Why can't they just stand up? None of them really have anything to lose if they do it all together, and it provokes a two-hour debate, and at least it's on the record, the historical record, the national record, that this thing was brought forward, that a debate was had, even if because of the Republican majority that nothing really comes of it. It has taken place, and it has instigated, you know, a conversation within the halls of Congress and the halls of the Senate, and that's where it matters.
Think back 4 years, folks, when members of the Congressional Black Caucus tried, and unsuccessfully, to get a single senator to stand with each one of them as they in turn asked for some clarity about what happened in Florida 4 years ago.
Let's talk to Cowboy listening on KSNB in Wyoming. Good morning, Cowboy.
How you doing, man?
Good morning.
What's going on, man?
Oh, I just kind of PO'd about the same issues you guys are.
Yeah.
I've spent about 2 days on this stupid-ass phone talking with aides and everything else in Washington.
Uh-huh.
Naturally, no senators. I got stats on Dayton. Dayton says no way, and he left town. Ted Kennedy's, he says no. Pat Lay says no, and about two-thirds of everyone else sounded like they were leaning that way. They were going to get back to me, but needless to say, my phone's been untied up. No one's got back to me, and today's a crucial day. I know what they're suffering from. They're suffering from lead deficiency, and they want to keep it that way.
Lead deficiency. Did you hear our little phone interview earlier with Reverend Jackson?
Run that past me again? I heard a little bit about that.
All right, well, let me just run this past you. Could you play that for him, Chris, the Jesse Jackson piece?
Senator Reid indicates that he feels reasonably sure that a senator, whose name I shall not disclose now for his or her own purposes, will stand up today. What I'm amazed at is how we have dumbed down expectations. People in New York today should be calling Senator Clinton and Senator Schumer. Should be calling the senator over in New Jersey, Corzine and Lautenberg. I mean, 44 senators would make a huge statement to the world. Bush right now, without the challenge, has a kind of moral mandate based upon the numbers. The numbers would not stand up on the scrutiny.
Yeah. So Reverend.
Amen.
Reverend Jackson says that you know, he's got word that someone at least is gonna have the courage. I wish it was all of them. It doesn't make any sense to me that not all of them are gonna stand up. But Cowboy, if I can call you that, because that's what you want to be called.
Well, Steve Schmore is my name.
Okay, Steve.
So never mind. I'm not afraid. I got no fear of lead.
Okay.
Actually, it's the fear of money, and I've never seen that much money. You know, I can't be afraid.
Okay. There you go.
Well, thank you for doing the big work out there in Wyoming. Appreciate
you calling.
Appreciate
it, Cowboy.
Well, you know, okay.
He was good. Guys from Wyoming, man, they're all right.
All right. Kathy, and listening to LIB in New Jersey. Good morning,
hey,
Kathy.
Good morning. How are you guys?
All right.
Kathy,
how you doing?
Well, you know.
Yeah,
sure. Don't call me a cowgirl. I was born in Reno, Nevada, believe it or not.
Oh, well,
wow.
It actually fits for you anyways.
Can we call you Annie Oakley?
I called Lautenberg's office yesterday and talked to them.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that he may be one of the ones that comes through for us. Corzine's going overseas today, so he won't be one of the 44 by any means.
Uh-huh.
He's going with Congressman Frank Pallone and Chris Smith
uh-huh.
to go look at the damage over there.
Right.
So
yeah.
I don't know. He's running for governor of our state, so I don't know if he would have, even if he were here, you know.
Corzine, you mean?
Yeah, John Corzine.
Yeah.
I don't know if he would have stood up because he's running for governor, and you know politics as it is.
I like Frank Pallone. You like him?
I love him.
He's great.
He's my congressman. I'm a good friend of his.
I saw him on Crossfire the other night. I've never seen him. He's handsome.
I hate listening.
he's a very
good-looking wife. Let me put that in there.
Oh, okay.
He's a very earnest guy, you know. I mean,
he is, and
he's very practical, and I just didn't know about him. I hopefully maybe we'll have him on the show.
Come to Jersey Shore. He's right here in Long Branch. His office is right here.
Oh my!
In my house.
I have relatives who live near Oakhurst.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, come on down.
No.
I'm 1 mile from the ocean. Not that I ever go down there, but
oh wow!
I'll get my phone number off the air. I don't care about that.
We may need you for next week's liberal confessional, okay?
Yeah, all right.
Kathy, thank you for calling.
Thanks a lot for calling. From the shore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's got that great Jersey feel.
Jersey thing, yeah.
Yeah. So, Kevin, listening to WLIB in New York, good morning. What's on your mind, my friend?
What's up, Kev?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey.
First off, I want to say you guys are missing a boat here in awarding Bush the
Father of the American Holocaust Award. Second off, I'd like to know what you guys think. Where is Kerry's mouth these days?
Well, apparently it's overseas.
Baghdad.
Today. I agree with you. I'm incredibly disappointed with his lack of nads in any of this. And apparently he sent out a letter to a lot of his supporters.
Yeah, it was horrible.
Yeah, it was horrible. I read a copy of it. I read half of it, and I got angry. Yeah, I don't know where he is, and it's very disturbing. You know, I'm just hoping that a couple of these cats, maybe Lautenberg, someone just suggested, Harry Reid, I just hope someone stands up to get this conversation going.
But, you know, there's an underlying issue that Kevin brought up here.
Yeah.
And part of it is because I heard Gore Vidal yesterday talking about Kerry, and he was less than complimentary. And there is a tendency now to say, hey, you know, Kerry really might not have been the guy. He didn't stand up. Okay, all well and good. But the only reason why talking about that makes sense is so that we don't make the same mistake 4 years from now. Whoever the guy or woman is 4 years from now, that's got to be the person.
But again, I don't understand why, you know, Kerry couldn't have seen this as an opportunity to rally his fellow Democrats in the Senate to take this action.
Because he doesn't have the imagination to see it that way. Let's be frank. That's not his stick, all right? But maybe, you know, we got behind him because we got behind him. He was the guy. Next time, we can't make the mistake of you know, being solidly behind the guy publicly and maybe, you know, privately say, gee, are we sure?
Yeah.
That's all.
But there was two things going on there, too. After the nomination occurred, I mean, on some level, as a Democrat and as a Democrat who desired to have
get
a
rid of Bush.
President, right? You know, it was sort of our responsibility.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it wasn't.
Right.
I just hope that next time it's not just us. I just hope that the Democratic Party pays close attention and that they get somebody that everyone is enthusiastically behind. If you look at Bill Clinton's second term, who wasn't on board with
right.
that?
Right. You know, I think we might have to build someone.
Maybe.
I'm just sad that, you know, that so many of these senators are obviously so frightened or self-involved or career-oriented that they can't make a symbolic stand that would re-energize the Democratic base.
Oh, just no, not me. I can't go with you, Bluto.
Doesn't it bother you? I mean,
it bothers me.
Yeah.
It bothers me a lot.
Yeah.
Because this isn't even about, you know, the left part of the party or the centrism or whatever.
Right.
It is about standing up and saying, you know what? This is our issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, MoveOn.org said, hey, we bought it, we paid for it, it's ours. Well, okay, then let's all stand up and make it ours.
Yeah, I agree with you. And we've been saying that all. Now I'm full of suspense, and tomorrow we'll have an answer.
Well, tomorrow we'll have an answer.
You know, please go to our website at morningsedition.com if you want information on how to contact your senator. Also to get information on how to stand up against Alberto Gonzalez by contacting your senator.
Yeah.
It'll make you feel good anyways. And we'll... A little bit. It'll be relieving.
Yeah, trust us.
And
it will.
We'll see what happens tomorrow. Here's the liberal agenda for today. From the Streisand Compound, 1, Sue Bush in Madison County, Illinois, saying his assault on victims' rights gave you, quote, severe emotional distress, end quote. 2, praise Alberto Gonzalez, but only because any TV movie made about him will have to star a Latino actor. 3, have tsunami relief party, but don't refer to it as a blowout. 4, Organize Legal Defense Fund to uphold Motley Crue's right to say the F-word on TV. Yeah, man. 5, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Oh, sure, Jeb's not running in 2008. He just went halfway around the world to be photographed with disaster victims because he cares. Wake up, sheeple. His foot is in the door, sheeple, and his fat ass is on the way.
We got more of this tomorrow with some very special guests. So be here or be square. Have a good one, Mary.
You too, Riley.
Air America Radio.